Hello, happy Sunday afternoon. I hope it finds you well, even if it's rainy, sunny, wherever you are. You're tuning in to Radio Free Brooklyn, and this is Ink and Worm, All Things Reading and Writing. I'm your host, Swan, and I'm blowing you kisses from the basement of the Velo Bike Shop in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And I'm really excited about the guests we have here today. We have Stephanie and Logan. For some reason, I almost called you Landon, and my brain was like, stop, that's not right. And Logan, you guys are founders of Call Me Ishmael, this wonderful thing we'll get into more detail later, but a website, a media project, blog aspect, we were talking about it. And you guys are collecting interesting stories about reading from anonymous voicemails, and readers call in and talk about books they love. And every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, you guys are transcribing them and posting them. And aside, you guys are winner of the 2015 Innovations in Reading Award. And I'm sure other things in the reading world that I just didn't find through my Googling.
Well, we were actually honorees for the National Book Foundations. We didn't win first prize, but we were part of the final honorees.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah.
The details are lost on me.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming, and I'm really excited.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm really excited for you guys to be here. And I mentioned, I sprung on you, we are doing free writes, which is like a 5-minute response to a poem. And this comes from a practice I learned from Nan Seymour, and she calls it river writing. So basically, I'll read a poem. You find the line or word or idea that's like jumping out at you, and just use that as a starting point for a free write. And
cool.
I'll set the timer for 5 minutes. We might cut it down to 4 or 3 minutes because we have so much to talk about, I'm sure. And then train of thought, if you get stuck, you can revisit the first line that jumped out to you or say what I really want to say. Or you can write against the prompt if you're like, I don't really like this poem. Swan's not good at poetry or something.
Are we reading our responses out?
Yeah, if you want to. So
this is so much pressure.
No pressure. You can say, no, thanks, Swan. No, thank you. And in response, the only thing I will ever say is thank you.
Excellent.
Not going to be like, oh, that was weird.
We appreciate it.
Or anything. Yes, of course. So this is a poem by William Stafford, and it's entitled, "If you don't know the kind of person I am, and I don't know the kind of person you are, a pattern that others made may prevail in the world, and following the wrong God home, we may miss our star. For there is a small betrayal in the mind, a shrug that lets the fragile sequence break, sending with shouts the horrible errors of childhood, storming out to play through the broken dike. And as elephants parade holding each other's tail, but if one wanders, the circus won't find the park. I call it cruel and maybe the root of all cruelty to know what occurs but not recognize the fact. And so I appeal to a voice, to something shadowy, a remote important region in all who talk. Though we could fool each other, we should consider, lest the parade of our mutual life get lost in the dark. For it is important that awake people be awake, or a breaking line may discourage them back to sleep. The signals we give, yes or no, or maybe, should be clear, the darkness around us deep." So again, just a free write, starting with the prompt, a line that jumped out to you, or writing against the prompt.
Thank you.
starting to wrap up your thoughts, getting to a place where you're ready to stop. Thank you guys so much. Would either of you be interested in reading what you wrote?
Yeah, I'll read a line. I sort of lost the whole rest of the poem after the phrase kind of person. Like, that just sort of, like, jumped right out at me.
Uh-huh.
So I riffed on that a little bit, and the last line of what I wrote was, what kind of a person is a free-riding, airplane-hopping, startup-hustling, jab-throwing one?
Mm.
Yeah.
What kind of a person?
I know.
How about you?
Sure, I took this in a similar direction.
Really?
No.
Oh.
but I like yours.
Did you copy mine?
Yeah, I was just reading over your shoulder and free writing or free writing.
Oh, hey, no. That's a new, I've never had that happen before. Just kidding.
I think it's a strategy to keep the pen going, you know, copy your neighbor's paper.
Yeah.
There's no rules in free writing.
I'm just flowing their thoughts.
That's right,
after
yeah.
them.
You're just lucky you're sitting further away, or he would have been copying.
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll read mine. So I really enjoyed the poem. Good choice, Swan.
Thank you.
And good reading. I said this poem must have nautical influences. Which stars should the listener use to find his bearings? I love it that there's always a remote and important region, and that the path there is always a fragile sequence of events. I wonder the direction that today's events will push us, and wherever we end up, how clear will we, all three of us, see or hear each other? That's it.
Hmm.
And,
thank you.
And because punctuation is an important part of our project, call me Ishmael, period.
Uh-huh.
I think it's worth putting on record that the question mark of my last sentence was dotted at the second the piano ended. You were playing. Very synchronous.
Wow.
That's magical.
Wait, did you say who wrote the poem?
William. Oh, shucks. I just closed it. Let me open it again. And because of my brain, it's not going to serve me well in this moment. And while
that's... You can send it to me later.
I'll read mine if you guys
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, please do.
It is important to be that awake people be awake, to be progressive and conscious and vocal and not let fear guide actions and interactions. I'm so grateful for presence, for people who are with me in a room and not 1,000 miles away in their thoughts or on their phone. And yet how often I check my phone, this strange act of compulsion, disconnection, and also such a powerful tool for communication and relationships, if you strive to be awake.
Nice.
Beautiful.
And the poem was by William Stafford.
Excellent.
Two Fs in Stafford. And then I also would love to play a one-minute clip. This is an introduction to your guys'. It's like the ad, the first thing you hit when you come to the page.
Sure.
Hey, Ishmael. Wanted to call and tell you about one of my favorite books.
Ishmael, what's going on, man? I wanted to tell you a little bit about my experience with Catcher in the Rye.
Hi. I want to talk about The Orphan Master's Son. I was adopted at birth, and at the time when I read this book, I wanted desperately to find my birth mother, and I found her.
The book I'm going to tell you about, Ishmael, is The Sneetches. I was born about 5 months before the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that separate by definition is not equal. My Sunday school teacher told us that God wanted us to be separate.
In the Strand Bookstore in New York City, in the basement level, with love of my life, I basically became obsessed with Patti Smith.
I could see the people that we were,
past our history and where we
where we come from goes into who we become.
One thing that was more credible than adults was books.
Gives me chills every time. Nice work. That's amazing. So we talked a little bit, but the platform is calling and leaving a voicemail, and then you guys are archiving them and sending them back out into the world. Amazing.
Thank you.
How many calls do you guys get average?
It really fluctuates day to day. You know, average day, we've definitely had days where we don't get any calls. Usually we get a couple in. And then when certain things, like when John Green shares us, we get tons and tons of Logan does a good impression.
Hundreds
per minute. Yeah, wait, do the John Green impression.
Well, I don't know which one.
Yes, you do. When the girls call and they
love
him.
Oh, no, no. He has such an amazing, amazing fan base. And when they all call you at once, it feels like his.
It's like Beatlemania. Like, yeah, these girls,
that's
and it's not only girls; it's like young men too. But there's like this age group that's just like so moved by this, and the call is part love for the book and also very large part love for John Green
and what he does. I think that is like a generational thing. A lot of people have been really impacted by the books that he put out. You know, kids that are reading it are reading that, which is
sure.
Interesting.
He's an amazing storyteller. And yeah, I mean, he also, so it's called Call Me Ishmael, which is the first sentence of Moby Dick, a very famous first sentence. And so we gave Ishmael a phone number. And so he was actually John Green, we were talking about, was one of the first people to have a book called in about one of his books. They called in about The Fault in Our Stars. And the caller was a person who had a similar form of cancer to, I believe, Hazel Grace is the name of the character. And she just talked about how this book helped her sort of reframe how she thought about herself. It's a very authentic story. She opens it with, hey, I'm a teenager, so of course I love John Green's books. And then she sort of goes into this really touching, divulging really, really personal parts of her life and how she copes with the disease. And it made it on John's radar, and so he shared it. And so we have a particular slant towards stories about John Green's book because he has so many followers, and they all called
in.
Yeah, it was great.
And the wide variety of stories from one thing, like all these kids have read this book and have each had their own experience with it, and which
That's
is
right.
the amazing thing. In your promotional video, you really get a sense of the authenticity and vulnerability that people go into these stories and into these places in their hearts and in their experience that are just really raw but real, for lack of better words. You talk a little bit about how the anonymous aspect helps people just talk and open up. I'm curious if you guys have called in and left a message on your own thing.
We have, and actually, I was curious if now that we're on the radio together, if you caught either of our voices in that promo. There's a little hidden gem in there.
One of Steph and I's first sort of adventures in New York City together was going to the Strand bookstore where she read, Guts by Chuck Palahniuk.
Yeah.
Guts is definitely something I highly recommend you reading on air live. Revulsive, awesome. A repulsive, awesome story.
I use it for one of my prompts. I mean, like,
do you really?
No, I'm saying
you
I
should. You definitely should.
It'd be interesting to see what people
sensory.
Get a sense of the sense of humor on my partner in crime here.
Yeah.
Well, that leads to another question I have is, do you guys ever censor or edit the phone calls?
I'll take that one just because Stephanie curates the calls. And I, along with our partner, Sam Johnson, who you were able to meet at Book Riot, do a lot of the audio editing itself. We do edit the calls, but it's mainly, we don't ever take out, the only things we take out are the person's name,
if they say it.
Yeah, because we like to keep it anonymous. And the ums and ahs and disfluencies.
Yeah.
Just out of respect for the listener's time.
Yeah, and also sometimes people will like smack their lips and that's like a sound that doesn't add anything. And I've also noticed sometimes even breathing. As soon as I notice someone breathing, I'm like, they're breathing.
They're breathing again.
I do that to myself too. I'm like, oh, stop breathing. Wait.
Well, as a radio person, so, you know, you have some great equipment in this room, but it's actually a joy to edit Call Me Ishmael. you know, as with the minimal edits that we apply, because it is real phone sound. This is a real phone with a real answering machine, and you couldn't ask for a more forgiving audio environment, because there's something very haunting and almost romanticized about it, but it's also very forgiving. Well, everyone expects a
I think it's familiar too. I think everyone since the invention of phones has connected with people through the phone, so I think even if you don't know this person, you're listening in a way that you've been trained to ever since you've started interacting with a phone.
And especially, like, I feel like lately a lot of our callers are sort of not accustomed to talking on the phone as much. Like, it's just not how most people communicate.
And that's, does anyone ever say, like, comma, period? Like, when you're doing voice to text?
No, not
like, haven't gotten that yet.
Logan does, actually. You do that when you're using, like, an app.
Sometimes I'll, like, leave a message for someone and
really?
Thanks, comma, love you, bye. Oh, wait.
No, but we find that people, like, kind of start out sort of nervous. Like, there's a lot of, like, nervous laughter and... you know, generally people start off, like, treating Ishmael as a real person. They say, hi, Ishmael, I'm calling to tell you about this. And they sort of, like, even laugh about it. But, like, by the end, it's so raw.
Real.
And it's, like, people just open up so much when they're able to connect with an anonymous audience vocally, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny. The conversation always gets, like, very sort of divisive and about the how it works, which is really important. But it's actually worth it to take a minute and pause and explain. We have the joy every night of, or every morning, of waking up and checking a fictitious character's voicemail box from the 1800s and having amazing bibliophiles from around the world, because you can use Skype to call in as well, sort of pour their hearts out. And it's such a, you know, precious exchange, we feel.
Yeah.
We feel really lucky. And it's sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's sad. It's always... just something that we get really excited to see how many voicemails Ishmael got.
Well, so that leads into a few other questions. The first, we talked about the almost romantic nature of the phone, of just that audio, but also the familiarity. And you guys have a new project that you've started with a phone, where people can find you at events and listen to the voicemails, like, through an actual phone, which was how I first experienced this and was, like, standing... at Book Riot Live last fall, just surrounded by people, being so moved by these people's experiences with books and so humbled for me. You guys were like, you should call in. And ever since then, I'm like, but I don't know what I would say, because everything they said is so beautiful and poetic. And I'm going to revert to
it. You can do it.
I'll be brave. Maybe today, if we have time.
That would be awesome.
Another question is about the time. So you talk about someone will call in and it'll kind of be a little awkward and like, I can't believe I'm doing this. I forgot how to talk. But as they start talking, like, it becomes real and they get into their story and what makes this book unique for them and their experience. So how long are these calls? Like, shortest call, longest call? Do you guys track those numbers?
We do. There's actually a... we don't track it specifically, but one of the greatest features of the answering machine that we leave is that it cuts people off at 3 minutes, and there's no way we can change that, even if we want to. And we tell them that. So when you call, the answer, the voicemail prompt will say,
you have three minutes.
The beep. But we also, of course, invite them to call back if they feel uncomfortable with their first one. It's very casual. Just say, oh, I just called Ishmael. This happens all the time, by the way. Mm-hmm. I just called Ishmael. That last one came out wrong. I'm going to go again.
Or people who just, like, were not finished and call back 3, 4, 5 times to keep talking about the book.
All the clips are not under 3 minutes.
That's
but true. They're not overwhelming. If you're listening to them, you're not, okay, when is this going to end? experience.
It's a great creative constraint. When people place multiple calls and it's a continuation, we try and combine them. I don't think anything is longer than 4 minutes.
It's not too much longer than 3, but...
Right.
And then my other question was, do you see where people are calling from? So you said all over the world. Do you see?
Sometimes we do. We can see area codes, but for Skype, it's just a message. It doesn't say. So a lot of times people say, though, and then one of my favorite things about curating them is you hear all the different accents and actually just trying to guess, especially because what someone sounds like isn't necessarily where they live now or where they're calling from on that particular day. So it's all very mysterious.
There's a wonderful call from the UK. If you're exploring the library, called My Family and Other Animals. It was, I remember it specific. We get thousands of calls, but I remember this one because it was right when we introduced Skype as an option. Because previously people had to pay long distance fees to call Ishmael from abroad.
They're like, it's worth it.
Yeah, so we picked up the bill and we just run a Skype number. And so unless they tell us where they're calling from, we don't know because Skype just runs it through one phone number. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned he had, you know, a brilliant British accent and mentioned his family and other animals.
I had
in the
like
UK.
A vocal crush on him. Like he just had like the most beautiful accent.
I do that. Anyone with a good accent.
Yes.
Is, you're just like, just keep talking, please. Yeah. Like don't, isn't that don't great? Stop.
But even just in that promo you played, like there's people sound like they're from all over the world, different ages. Like it's so fun to imagine who they are.
Yes. And like you said, the mystery of
it all. Sometimes people claim them. It doesn't happen often, but we share them 3 days a week and every once in a while somebody will chime in and be like, that was mine. And then they'll share it. And that's really special too.
Yeah. You'll own it.
Yeah.
It's so funny because never has anyone who claimed it looked anything like you thought they were going to look like.
Oh, how funny.
Because you build a mental image. Because when you're working it and turning it into a
constantly making assumptions.
Transcribing
it,
you're like, I know what this person looks like. Nope. Never.
That's like my dream. How cool would it be one day if we're at one of these book festivals and someone comes up and is like, I called about this one. I would lose my mind to meet these people in real life.
So that's not built into the system because of the anonymity. So that's never happened? You've never had someone approach you and be like, you guys did mine?
I don't think
just
so.
Digitally?
Not in person.
We've had authors come up and say that they've seen calls, which is also like crazy because we're both such big readers that just knowing that an author feels moved by the work that we're doing is like mind-blowing.
That's one of the most exciting things in the whole project is so often we'll get calls about living authors. Mm-hmm. We share them and we just tag the author on Twitter or
and
wherever.
They respond.
And almost, I'd say, gosh, over half the time.
Oh, yeah.
They notice it because it's such a bizarre thing and it's like nicely enough removed where it's not the sort of.
It's not like a fan base thing where it's got kind of like a. Without like degrading it, there's like a tiny bit of desperation or just like, hey, pay attention to me. This eliminates that somehow. It's.
Well, also, and I think that people took the time to actually step aside from their day, do the act of calling in, which isn't a small thing. That takes time.
Yeah, it's like leaving a postcard. It's a forgotten nicety.
So, so that's, I think, one of our favorite things whenever we get a call about a living author and they respond or react is like really, really gratifying.
That's happened with several authors. And then one of the most, I think, one of the most entertaining versions of that, we have this brilliant call about the Webster Dictionary, which so most of the calls we get are about fiction books, a handful about are about nonfiction books, and one is about a reference book.
No, we have an illustration guide too.
Oh, that's true. The Atlas of Human Anatomy. That's right.
But they're far outnumbered.
And so this dictionary call is so engaging, and you know, months after it was published, a editor of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary reached out to us on Twitter, or really just tagged us, I think, and said, you know, apparently someone really loves their dictionary or something. So to think that it, you know, sort of trickled its way to an actual editor of the dictionary.
And can you imagine how hard those people work? And like,
I didn't find that one. Now I'm just hearing you guys talk. I couldn't listen to them all.
Oh, sure.
And I was, if you have an afternoon and you don't want to watch TV, geek out on voicemails about books. It's a great alternative. I would say superior even.
Yeah.
And let's rewind a lot. You guys came up with this idea just hanging out, having beers one night, right?
Yeah.
Similar to what we're doing now.
Yeah. Did you see there's an article on the internet of like, when you're brainstorming, drink beer. When you're trying to get shit done, drink coffee.
No.
It's like this one of those infographic things.
Maybe.
I do it backwards too. I'm the worst. I'm like coffee with
or
booze.
Or both all the time. Like,
now I'm getting both.
Continuous loop of coffee beer.
Coffee beer. So you guys were talking and you're like, oh, there's this cool project. What was the timeline? Did you guys jump on it and create?
Yeah,
tell
it
us
happened
the story.
Really fast, and my partner Logan is like one of the craziest sprint workers I've ever seen. He basically goes away for
a
weekend.
Lots of coffee.
Yeah, lots of coffee. A little beer.
And beer.
Some beer, mostly coffee.
No, so he, like, I want to say in like a weekend, you sort of like disappeared and came back with the website done. And our website's so beautiful.
It is so beautiful.
He did a great job with it. So that the website came out pretty quickly, and then we sort of tweaked around with the what the format would look like for a couple of weeks. But then once we set the once we sent the number out to sort of the inner circle of bibliophiles that we knew would have good stories, it sort of snowballed really quickly, which was a nice surprise.
So when did you create the promo video? Because there's such a great collection there.
That first set of callers, yeah. We made it out of that. Of course, we asked a couple of our
files,
a couple of our friends to place calls, and then some of those people we didn't know. Actually, I'm gonna sort of humble brag on the website a little bit because I'll never get to say this again. I don't think.
All right.
But so we didn't win, but we got honoree for Webby.
Yeah.
And we were like kind of failed to talk about this or publicize it. But the reason I'm telling this story is because it was in the category of weird. And that's worth bragging about.
Yeah,
to me.
You
we
guys
got a Webby for having the weirdest website, or an honoree for a Webby for having the weirdest website.
Yeah.
That's something like that's on my bucket list.
To be celebrated, you are officially weird.
It's like us. There's like a website about unicorns.
We lost to corn dogs.
You lost to corn dogs.
To be fair, corn dogs are far superior to anything we could ever invent.
Yeah, all praises
a good corn dog.
Yeah, you can't put mustard and ketchup on Call Me Ishmael. So fail.
You could. It's not recommended.
No.
And Maria Popova jumped onto the project as well really quickly and created like a open call. How would you describe this?
Sure. Maria Popova of Brain Pickings has been a great champion of Call Me Ishmael. She was one of the first people to share it. And she's also shared that rotary phone that you mentioned earlier. But the way that she got involved, along with a couple other people, Joe Hansen of It's Okay to Be Smart, who's a pretty awesome and extremely intelligent YouTuber,
and Reading Rainbow.
Which I was like, what?
I know.
That's so cool.
I know.
Did they reach out to you, or you reached out to them and they responded?
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember?
They actually, Reading Rainbow, I reached out to Joe, and I probably reached out to Maria, too. But
it happened.
I think Reading Rainbow,
Yeah, we were like social media, like admirers of each other.
Ah.
And we both like lost our mind. And then we actually, so Reading Rainbow partnership is unbelievable. But then we got to meet LeVar totally outside of the partnership. And Logan was very cool. I basically like drooled and I think said like, I love you. At
I think all we could figure out to say with him was like, have you seen Hamilton yet? And we haven't even seen Hamilton.
Yeah.
So. I haven't. I was talking to my friend last night. I haven't even listened to the soundtrack yet because everyone is doing it. So there's this resistance that the more people jump
given,
on, the more I'm like.
Given.
But also, I'm never going to see it at this point in time.
Totally
I could win the lottery too. And really that would be like.
I enter the lottery every single day and I'm beginning to think that. It's never gonna.
It's rigged.
Something.
I don't know.
Single day.
Well, LeVar struggled to get tickets.
Yeah,
I'm sure he ultimately.
So
got
had
them,
he
but
seen?
If he can't get.
He
them,
had him, but he got them in
it.
The end. I found by watching him on Twitter.
Yeah, I think he's one of those people that's like, "Hey, I really want to see this," and somebody will be like, "We'll find a way."
It's so weird though, seeing him in real life. Like a part of my brain from like childhood that I've not tapped into in decades was just like. You like I watch you every day.
Yeah, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I'm like nervous talking about it. Even my palms are sweating.
Yeah, anytime I've met someone that I'm just like I admire you so much, I drool and then I'm just like thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for existing.
Yeah,
thank you. Like and I'm like, okay, bye now. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah.
Thanks. Bye. Like I can say thank you 5,000 times.
Yeah. That's all you can do.
So Maria Popova. Tags your guys' like project a place for bibliophiles who want to gush over their love for John Green, which you reference and explain why they read poetry out loud to trees and everything in between. reading poetry out to trees.
That's actually one of my favorite calls.
Have I didn't catch
it?
No, so
it's about a book of poems called Thirst
by Mary Oliver.
Ah. And this girl talks about how she this is like also the epitome of like my favorite kind of Ishmael call. Like it's awesome when people just talk about how much they love a book and what it meant to them. But if you have a specific story that like places you with a book, I just think it's so interesting. And there's nothing that makes me want to pick up a book more than this.
Yeah.
So this young, she's kind of southern sounding, right? She's maybe a little.
She's from Nashville.
Okay. She looks nothing like you would imagine.
Yeah.
No, she talks. talks about how she just loved this book so much, and so she had also read somewhere on the internet that it helps trees and plants to grow if you talk to them and read them. So she and her best friend took a copy of Thirst by Mary Oliver, went out into this park in Nashville, and read the poems to trees. Like, can you imagine loving poetry that much that you just want to physically go, like, share it with trees?
I read it to my
how
dog.
How bad do you want to read that
I
now?
Read it to my dog, and she falls asleep.
What
I think
do you read to your dog?
All kinds of poetry.
That's your call me a dog call.
Maybe. She just falls asleep, though. I'm sure trees are a much more attentive audience.
Yes.
Than just standing at attention.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
You mentioned in an interview with Art Beat, which is where I'm referencing some of these questions, that some of your favorite voicemails are about rereading. Is that something that you personally practice?
I'm a bad rereader.
I just started.
There's so many books in the world. Like, it's hard. I mean, a couple favorites, like Harry Potter, J.D. Salinger, I'll reread. What do you reread?
I reread every once in a while, but I had a really intense phase of rereading when in graduate school I took a children's lit and adolescent lit class, and basically, you know, the class amounted to rereading 100 books that you read somewhere between first and fifth grade.
Wow. All those which is formative awesome. Years.
Yeah.
What did things start to stand out for you?
Oh gosh, the most sort of vivid story I can tell you is that when I was in fourth grade, I read Maniac McGee by Jerry Spinelli, I think, and had no idea it was about race. And then when I read it in college, it's all about race. And so I was thinking that, and it's a beautiful story. So I was thinking that, right, like when you're young, you don't even think that stuff doesn't occur to you. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of falling on you know, very pure ears and eyes. And then you grow up and you're exposed to some of the horribleness in the world. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you realize. I'm sure that not every fourth grader would have the exact same experience, but I was lucky to live in a place where every race went to a tiny school in Athens, Georgia, and we just weren't really aware that folks were racist yet, I guess.
Wow. In Athens?
Yeah, I'm from Athens, Georgia. I grew up there. And it was a crazy reread. I mean, I'm sure everyone has reread stories like that, but I think really, really big things happen when you reread things that you read in fourth grade.
Yeah, you know? Those formative years where you're just absorbing and processing so much, and then going back to that with that lens, I'll read watch movies too that I watched as a kid, and I'm just like, whoa,
are you a big
I missed
re-reader?
That. I've started since this project because I read so many articles about, and I also listened to this podcast that one of the authors in the podcast, I'll put it in the show notes. His platform was books are conversations, and the conversation you're going to have with a book at an age. At one age is going to be completely different than the conversation you're having at a different age. And my conversation with this book is different than your conversation with this book. Mm-hmm. And that's something that kind of hit me hard. And I was like, well, let me reread the things that I loved as a child. And most of them have stood the test of time. There's been a couple of things which discouraged me from rereading because I reread them and I was like, oh, I like it less now, which is always a little disappointing because you're, you know, at the time it was something really impactful, and then you've just, like, changed your belief structure where you're like, that no longer has the same value.
Hmm. Right. There's a really great Catcher in the Rye story voicemail about on Call Me Ishmael, about Catcher in the Rye, where a woman who read it middle school, then she read it when her brother got in some trouble, and then she read it when she was becoming her first year as an English teacher, and now she assigns it to her students every year. And each of those phases represents a very different interpretation of Holden and his plight.
Yeah, and just what the same story can mean different, that the same story can mean different things at different times in your life. It's a really cool, like, lifelong reader story. Forgot about that one.
One of the first ones on the playlist that is on your website is this mother talking about reading. Is it Catcher in the Rye? I think maybe.
Oh, To Kill a Mockingbird.
To Kill a Mockingbird. To each of her kids, she watches their faces and she knows what's going to happen. And she, I was just like, wow, like the visual with like.
I love the calls that when parents call in about what they read to their kids and things that they loved, like, weirdly, it makes me really want, like, excited to have kids and, like, make little bibliophiles out of people. Yeah. Like, it just, like, because what you read is, like, so important. I just still remember what my parents would read out loud to me. I remember their voices. I remember, like, the mm-hmm. tones that they would say. And being able to sort of, like, be in charge of what another human is exposed to in the literary world. It's, like, a big responsibility. But it's also such a, like, funny, lighthearted thing. Like, one of our favorite calls is about this. This father calls in about a book called Pajama Time, which mm-hmm. I never
Sandra Boynton,
which I had never read as a kid. But he talks about how much his daughter loved this book, and they read it over and over again, bedtime after bedtime, for weeks on end, until his whole family just like could not handle this book anymore.
It has a song in it.
Yeah, it has a song in it. But he just talks about how there's this one line.
Jump time.
Yeah. But he's like, there's no more important book to be good than a kid's book, because you get so many more miles out of it than any novel that you read and put on a shelf.
And not only that, but if the kid likes it, you are required by kid law to read it over 100 times to them, so it better be good.
Yeah. I mean, it begs the question, I feel like there's something relevant, but just like rereading the same story so many times that you start to hate it, but your kid is still just like, again.
Exactly.
Like, Jonathan.
Yeah. And also, like, I wonder, I've heard parents sometimes being like, they'll change the story because they're so tired of reading it and see if their kids like, and like, you know, create this different experience with a book of the kid being like, no, that's not what happens. This is what happens, because the kid, of course, has it memorized. Like, funny things. Let's check my questions. I think we got through all the questions I had.
Ooh.
That's kind of amazing.
Wow.
Because we are on such a roll.
I know. I feel like we are so chatty, too.
Yeah.
So I think that means it's Call Me Ishmael time for you, Swan.
That's what I was going to say, but then my heart started to beat really fast, and I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe I won't suggest it. And I'll do this. This is fun. And
I don't think we've ever seen a live one.
I know.
Yeah, we're making...
We can shield our eyes if you,
yeah.
if
we're
you
making,
want.
Nobody will know that this is me.
No.
And we're making history. Okay.
You might be the first call to have cheerleaders, though. Like, we're very excited and positive about this.
Holding my hand as I call it.
Definitely.
My computer is deciding to slow down.
This is so meta, too, because you'll be calling on air, which will go to our voicemail.
Yeah.
Which you'll look at later.
Which we'll publish later.
Do you have a big catch-all bin for all the calls that don't get transcribed yet?
Yeah, that's actually a good thing to... So, we don't... We do two things. One, we pick our favorite ones, the things that stir us or we feel that our audience will appreciate the most, and we actually hand type those with mm-hmm. a typewriter, and then we record. We have this awesome rig that has Silly Putty on the chassis of the typewriter.
Double sided tape.
Infinite paper.
MacGyver would be proud.
MacGyver would love this. And so while the audio plays, we record the pre-typed that we typed, that Steph and Sam typed, and sometimes me. I get to work on the audio, thankfully. But it's Steph's typewriter, so she probably wouldn't let me do it anyways. But anyways, as it rolls by, you hear the story. And it's just like a really sort of enchanting way to share the story. And so we do that with the best ones. And then... But we publish all of the calls that we receive, and we put them on a section of the site called the Galley Calls, modeled after, you know, the galley copy of books. And so we actually don't edit those at all, even for disfluencies, and we sort of just share them so that people can hear their own calls and hear each other's calls. And there's some great ones in there, too.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it'll end up as a galley call, and then we won't be able to feature it until a couple of months later.
I should have been doing this while you're talking, but I thought it was ready. La, la, la.
I was trying to buy you time.
I know. You were very helpful, and then I didn't.
I wish I could call in anonymously. I was just thinking about, like, I knew that, like, you guys wouldn't recognize my voice or, like, my phone number, I wonder what I'm calling about.
Except you have calls that are anonymous.
Yes, but my team knows.
Did you answer that question?
Oh, I don't know.
Have you called
in? He did not answer the question, but he has called in.
I'm trying to think.
And here's the biggest out, actually.
I have called in.
He's the voice of Ishmael, so when you actually call, that's the voice you hear. Yeah. So that's the biggest unveiling.
Because we couldn't find somebody
man behind the curtain.
Okay. I think maybe I'm thwarting this because my nerves.
That's
are like,
okay.
If it doesn't happen, then it can't happen.
You
but
can
now
call
I'm
in secret.
Now I'm determined, or I can call in secret. Let me try one more time. 3250.
Oh, you could also probably call from your cell phone and just stand close to the
mic.
Oh, wait,
yeah, while you're doing that, I can, for anyone who's listening that might want to call.
Yeah, the number is.
Sure. Yeah, the number is 774-325-0503. Yeah, 0503. Sorry, I have it memorized, but I was trying to read it, and I have this little thumbnail open.
Okay, 774-325-0503.
That's correct. And if anyone's really nervous, you get it goes straight to voicemail. You can call back as many times as you like.
Hi, this is Ishmael. Thanks for calling. Please leave me a message about a book you love and a story you've lived. It can be funny, sad, profound, thoughtful, reflective, you name it. And if you feel like you mess up, just keep going. I do lightly edit each message for the general listener's pleasure. Unfortunately, I can't post every voicemail I receive, but I do listen to them all, and I do pick one to transcribe and share each weekday. If you get cut off around the 2.5 minute mark, feel free to call back. All right, that's it. Tell me about the book you love and the story you've lived.
Hey, Ishmael. I wanted to share a story. My dad had this rule that before I saw the movie for anything, I had to read the book first. And I remember specifically The Secret Garden because I wanted to watch the movie so bad, and my sister saw it and was talking about it, and I was like, can't I just watch it? And he's like, no, you have to read the book first. So I did, and it kind of became a lens through which a lot of my childhood was shaped, being outside, gardening, getting dirt on my hands. And I love that that's something that I still revisit. I was in the community garden in Brooklyn, and my roommate is sharing it with me. So she's like, this is your part. And it just reminded me of like the scene where she's like, man, can I have a bit of land just to plant things, plant seeds and make things grow? And so I think I just wanted to talk about how that shaped me. And you are, in a sense, the books you read because they impact the way that you see the world. So thanks for listening. And that's my story.
Woo-hoo. That was beautiful.
Nice.
Oh, that was a good one.
I'm going to bring your mics back up. Oh, my little heart.
Beautiful. No, that was beautiful.
Personal experience.
That was perfect. It's so succinct. I feel like you got so much covered.
Oh, I've been really thinking about this since last fall.
Oh, my gosh.
Just kidding.
That's a timeline. There you go.
But really.
Oh, great job.
We just got a notification. Oh, how do you pull up notifications on here? Your voicemail came through.
Everything's up and working.
You just got my voicemail. That's so funny.
That is great.
Yay. Thanks for encouraging
me
and being patient.
Thank you for doing that.
The technological difficulties.
No, thank you for the story.
The Secret Garden. You're reminding me of, what's the awesome character's name in there?
Colin?
Colin is
Sarah,
and Duncan?
Who's
the one who talks to animals?
Oh,
Duncan, right?
Yeah, I think, but I'm getting it wrong.
I think I'm getting it wrong, but anyways.
I just talked about the book and I'm like,
No, you got the main two. You got the main two, and then I think it's like almost Duncan.
Colin.
It's almost.
Something
close to Duncan.
It says, okay, well, while we're doing that, what were you going to say about him?
Oh, you just totally reminded me that he was one of my favorite characters. I just remember reading that book, too, and just being like, because I think he's kind of this, right, like, in literary terms, sort of this manifestation of the garden. He speaks to animals. Mm. He has a green thumb.
And he teaches her. I mean, before she's like, ew, it's dead, and he's like, no, it's alive. Look.
Yeah.
I'm going to be honest that I've never read The Secret Garden.
And
I've seen the movie.
That's okay. That was my dad's
shaming
me.
Rule.
I know.
So we've got Mary, Colin, Dickon.
So close.
What were you saying?
I said Duncan.
Duncan, Dickon. Enunciation
close.
Depends on the accent. Okay, so I love ending my shows with a rapid fire series of questions. I'll ask the question.
Do we both answer or take turns?
We can both answer. And if the answer is I don't know, that's fine.
Okay.
Okay.
So is there a book you've not gotten around to reading?
Infinite Secret Jest. Garden.
Yay! And then you mentioned this, but not anything specific. Books that you remember your parents reading to you.
Oh, good one.
Mine's Little Women. My mom used to read
oh,
to
really?
Me. And Nancy Drew.
Ooh, I love that.
First novel my mom got me was The Boxcar Children. That's easy to remember. There's another one about a dog who was a hero in World War II that I vividly remember, like, being one of the first books that my parents read. And I was obsessed because I wanted a dog really bad.
Mm, that was me when I read... there's a book about a beagle.
Shiloh.
Shiloh, yeah.
Shiloh. Shiloh hurts my heart. Call about Shiloh. Yeah. When it came through, I was like, God bless you, caller, for reminding me that Shiloh existed.
Yeah, that's one that gets lost, yeah. I think, for some reason, which is funny because I'm a dog walker now. Mm-hmm. And beagles are such, like, as a personality dog, they are very specific personality.
I had a beagle growing up. I love them so much. I used to make my beagle sit next to me while I read Shiloh, like, forced him. Like, you will sit with me and be my beagle.
Yeah. This is us. Yeah. This is us. do you guys write? Let me ask, because this is a show about reading and writing.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'll donate my time to Steph. The most writing I do is, you know, I really love the craft, and I'll do it about once a month because I really want to and because I really respect it, but it's not a habit, and I wish it was.
Mm. I studied playwriting at Emerson College, but I've been a bad playwright the last couple of years, so right now I'm trying to get a little more structured with a bigger fiction project.
Mm, that's, I think, the great challenge is I've been writing short stories. I have to trick myself into writing, so I'll write letters, but then you lose that because you send it away. And so lately I have a couple friends that I'll email every day, mm-hmm. and I'll just be like, hi, here's my story today, and it's like a short story experience. And
is that a mailing list I can get on? Because that sounds really fun to get in your email.
yeah, let's email our short stories. Okay. And that's an interesting thing because – I didn't think I had any kind of a novel inside of me, but mm-hmm. then I'm looking at these short stories and I'm like, oh, this almost could be the same character in a certain sense. So, like, I think that
it's very cool.
Interesting to see how your craft develops as you invest time into it. That's something I had Amber Sparks on, and she's a short story writer who's, mm-hmm. like, challenging herself to see if she can actually write a novel or if she's, like, not that we're all stuck in, like, the, you know, defining something and labeling it, but I think you have an aptitude. Anyways, that was a really long answer to the question that I asked. So do you have any routines or rituals for your reading or writing? We can just focus on
that's
reading.
That's a good question. I've read a lot about creativity this winter, mm-hmm. and so the only ritual I really have is, like, putting time in my calendar for writing. I just try to do, like, even if it's, like, 15 minutes
every
day.
In your phone with, like, a reminder or just...
Yeah, just in my Google
We talk
calendar.
About... We like the paper calendars.
Yeah, we
like,
talk... Yes. Yes, I remember.
Like, I organize my thoughts better on the page than I do on the screen.
Yeah, so just, like, kind of... giving dedicated time to it. Reading, I don't really have any rituals. I sort of fell out of reading for a couple months when I first moved to New York, but mm-hmm. Now as long as I have a book on me, I can pick up in line or on the subway.
Yeah.
Steph reads more than anyone I know. She's constantly reading, constantly at the library. My rituals, I find that this one might be a little self-destructive over time, but...
I like it. Yeah, I like it already.
Yeah, me too. No, I just I find that I'm most creative when I stay up really late or get up really early or have something really jarring.
I think there's something to be said for just like pushing you outside of... Actually, that's a common thing. I know a lot of writers who do some of their best work when they're hungover. And like, what is that about?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not like... I feel like I'm in like denial on air. I don't really drink that
you'll
much.
Listen to this, you'll listen to this in a couple months being like, oh, that's... Yeah. I have a problem.
Yeah, seriously. It's just the mood like catches me. I think what it really is I have my day job. I do a lot of editing and oversee a lot of writing. And so for me, I need to get to like a different brain space. Mm-hmm. And so I think that whole staying up late, getting up early, or drinking a beer helps me change the wave patterns in my brain to get that spot of writing.
Which has, yeah, that's a thing. And there's, it's like either you have to do that or you have to reinforce like neural pathways that are already there. So like triggering, you've read lots of books about creativity. So like listening to the exact same playlist every time you paint.
Yeah, just
or
making
write,
a habit.
Because your brain
out of
will be like, oh, we're writing now because we're listening to
Pavlovian.
These.
I just read.
We are animals.
No, I just read Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic.
Oh, I love
it. Did you read
it? I didn't want to like it, and I loved it so much.
I don't know why I had, like, I've never read anything else by her, but for some reason I was
She's so big. It's the same reason why I can't read Infinite Jest. Too many people are reading it.
No, but she
and
just
Hamilton.
Had such good tips, and she was like, if you wait around for, like, inspiration or the mood to strike, you'll never finish a project.
Right. I've shared things that she said so often that I'm like, that book's so good.
So
if you are creative, like, it's worth your time. And it's easy and it's fast. It looks big. It looks
and it's
daunting.
Fun. She has, like, such a good sense of humor about it. And she's very humble.
Easy to follow. Yeah, totally.
She's great.
If I were to go to your house, what books would be showcased in your home?
Logan
First of all,
recently.
They'd be by color.
Steph, what? I'm jumping on this. We live together, and Logan recently told me no more buying books. I think he said that last night.
No more.
We're about to move, and we're talking about how to move them. He's like, please just back off buying books. We have enough books. Go to the library.
All the.
And she does go to the library. Well, it's more just a New York storage issue. If we were. Not in New York. I would never say such blasphemous phrase. But we're out of room.
There's so many inches. Only so many inches.
No, we have a good... We should figure out, like, a visualization of our library, though. We've got some cool things because Logan works in education. And so he has, like, these really amazing books about development and education and learning. And then we have a ton of fiction. Fiction probably is the most...
Fiction, for sure.
What else? We have like six copies. We have like six copies of Waiting for Godot because it's my favorite book. So I have
you give it
two
away?
Copies of my own. I have one for Logan that I gave him, and then I have like other people give it to me.
Oh, how funny!
Do you have multiple copies of anything?
Tough one. I don't know.
Do you have any?
So I'm minimalist. I think
That's
I get
a good way to be.
I stopped saving books. Because my life path put me on a course of really eclectic living situations.
Really?
Oh, I lived in a treehouse. I lived in a greenhouse. I lived in my car.
Tell me about living in a cabin.
And we are running out of time. But so basically, I started to see the value of libraries, which is funny because as a child, that was where I lived. I think any time I wasn't in school or at home, I was at the library.
Yeah.
And so that I donated all my books to the library with the logic of like, if I want to read it again, I know where to find it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's great.
Yeah. But books, people love their books. Totally
like
love their books.
Books.
You and everyone else. I do have books that I chronically don't read and I just like, I'm like attached to them for some reason.
I really like giving them away though. Too.
Yeah.
So I think that that's.
And then when you give them away and they come back to you, it's the best feeling ever.
You're like the universe. Yes. Circle.
Yeah.
All right. Well, again, thank you so much for coming. If people want to find you, call me Ishmael on anything, Instagram, Twitter, you're most active on, and of course, your website where you're posting. I'm also on all the socials, Ink and Worm or Swandrishti. Look me up. Talk to me. Do a rating if you're so inclined. Empty Orchestra is next. Exploring the dynamic relationship between song and singer in the context of karaoke with Angelica and Amanda. And I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it, valence.